And welcome back to National Football Authority Radio. I am your host, Matt Baxendale, a.k.a. Bax, and thank you so much for tuning in today. Now, typically, this is just the NFL Writers Roundtable, where we sit down with some of our experts and discuss everything about the National Football League. But today's show's got a little more for you. Our NFL Editor-in-Chief, Bear Heiser, is out in Oxnard, California this fine week, and he's been at the New Orleans Saints camp. He's been reporting on it live for us on NationalFootballAuthority.com. And you know what? He's going to join us here in a little while as part of our Writers Roundtable, because believe me, the NFL Writers Roundtable is still going to play a prominent part of the show. But it's also going to include Robert Neely, by the way, because our NFC South previews have just came out on NationalFootballAuthority.com. So we got Bear covering the New Orleans Saints. We've got Robert covering the Carolina Panthers. And we got me located here in the ATL dropping knowledge on the Falcons. You've got all kinds of NFC South coverage. But Bear's also going out there and he's interviewing a couple of the New Orleans Saints. We're going to have Jimmy Graham on the show as part of a press junket after one of their practices that took place on Wednesday evening. So we're going to have a little bit of a straight from the horse's mouth, if you will, about the New Orleans Saints and what they think their prospects are going to be for this season. So you will not want to miss that. But before we get started here with the New Orleans Saints topics and with our NFL Writers Roundtable, I have one thing I do want to get off of the top of my head. And now I normally save this bit for the college football segment because, you know, let's face it, college football is my baby. While I am the host of the National Football Authority Radio podcast, you know, college football is kind of my deal. I'm the one who's in charge of our college football previews. And by the way, the Big Ten, the SEC, and the Pac-12 are dropping this week at NationalFootballAuthority.com, so don't miss it. But I wanted to talk about the New York Giants and just the house of horrors that was their preseason game. You know, they lost one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL in Terrell Thomas to a knee injury. They had a couple other major injuries. And this is one reason that general managers both love and hate the preseason like they love and hate themselves. They want their starters to get through a couple series healthy and have nobody go down. But you have to make sure everybody can play their way into shape. And it's such a fine line to cross. And what we may have seen from the Giants with a couple of major injuries coming out of that game is that you may see a team in the Giants that was a wild card contender, possibly even an NFC East contender, being pushed back towards the edge of the playoffs. Who knows if it's going to be the difference or not between having a top cornerback on your team or not. I have to think it's going to be a huge blow for them, especially in a division where you have the Eagles who are going to throw the ball all over the place with Macklin and Jackson. You're going to have a team like the Cowboys. When you got Tony Romo slinging the ball around, things are going to happen. And, well, the Redskins, they kind of stink, so maybe it won't hurt as much against them, but this is the dangers of the preseason. You want to get your young players, your backups in, to get them experience and evaluate them, see who's getting better, see who's really best suited to make the team. But your established guys, it's a constant terror that someone's going to go down and cost you a major part of your season. And Thomas's injury is just the latest example. So you know what? Maybe the preseason needed to be shorter than the CBA. Maybe we missed something here. And I know that the owners needed those extra two games for money purposes, but for football purposes, I don't think it did us any good. Alrighty, folks. Well, the first thing we're going to throw to here is going to be the interview with Jimmy Graham of the New Orleans Saints. Check that out right now here. Bear Heiser is on the scene. You will not want to miss it. And then right after that, we got the NFA Writers Roundtable on the National Football League coming up. Stick around here on National Football Authority Radio.
You're listening to National Football Authority Radio. NationalFootballAuthority.com, the shooting star of football coverage on the internet.
In the field, you know, last game, you know, just kind of had some bumps, and, you know, just kind of smoothing out those bumps right now.
What's the fan support mean to you guys out here?
It's surprising, honestly. You know, it's I didn't expect it. You know, it seems like every day just more and more people are out here cheering us on. And, you know, I mean, even kickoff return, people are screaming and hollering. It's really cool.
Jimmy, given by the performance that you guys have had on offense for the first couple of weeks of the preseason, is this game important to, you know, score, to get into a really good rhythm heading into the regular season, because this is the most you guys, the starters, are going to play?
I definitely think it is. You know, this game we're really looking to start off fast. You know, Sean Payton you know, he keeps helping out, you know, have a good start, because, you know, I think we've been kind of slow starting, and then next thing you know, we're off the field, you know, so I think this game we're really going to look to start back.
How much is your rapport grown with the guy they're cheering for over there through even just this camp? How much has it grown from there?
You know, I feel like me and him definitely have a special bond. You know, it's one of those where, you know, every little route, every play that I'm in there, you know, he's the first one to tell me what I'm doing wrong or what I need to work on to get better. You know, and, you know, him, Sean Payton, David Thomas, Terry Malone, all of them, it seems like every little play is just, you know, working me. And then after practice, you know, he never lets me just rush inside. You know, he's always keeping me after for extra.
So he's keeping you after.
Yes. You know.
Are you not allowed to say no?
To him, never. whatever he tells me, I'm going to do.
Year last year, really, really good. What do you expect out of yourself coming into this year?
You know, I'm a little older as far as football goes. You know, last year, I'd only played football for a year before I started last August, you know, and just seemed like everything was just coming from every angle. But now I'm just more confident in what I'm doing. You know, I mean, I don't have to think as much anymore. I feel like it's just me reacting more. And, you know, before I would get out of the huddle and think, okay, what's the play? And now I'm more thinking of what's the coverage, you know, how I'm going to beat my man. And I think that's the biggest difference is just my maturity in football.
Was there a point where that came? I mean, in terms of that knowledge and that the game's slowing down a bit, or?
Oh, definitely. At the end of last year, you know, I mean, it went from about Mach 5 to about Mach 1, you know, and, you know, still going fast, but seemed like, you know, I mean, I grasped our plays, things, my routes a lot better. And now with me, you know, having to be a bigger part of the run game, it's kind of helped me to see just a bigger picture.
Talk about the tight end or the progression of your position in terms of more basketball players like yourself getting into the game and the skills that translate from that sport to this sport.
You know, I definitely think catching, obviously, explosion towards the ball. I think that's one of the biggest things in the red zone. You know, if the ball's in the air, you know, chances are I'm going to get it.
Football 30 Radio NFL Writers Roundtable. I'm Matt Paxton. I'm joined today by Robert Neely and from Bear Heiser here. Bear, you're out in a training camp out there in California with the New Orleans Saints. Give us a little bit of an update what's going on there before we really get into things.
It's a beautiful day up here in Oxnard, California. The Saints have been practicing here since Monday, getting ready for their game this weekend up in Northern California. As you may or may not know, this is Oxnard is the facility where the Dallas Cowboys have had their training camp in recent years. And the Saints, it looks like they're going to be signing a deal to return here for the next upcoming few seasons. So they must be really happy with, you know, the situation up here. Huge turnout in terms of Saints fans. Hoot at chants every couple of minutes. You know, in terms of observations, Carl Nix, offensive tackle, he's a glaring, he's someone that I can really tell that they're missing out there. Adrian Arrington, a wide receiver, is battling for a roster spot. He's probably the fifth or sixth guy on the depth chart right now. He's someone really to watch. I've noticed him use his speed to you know, to bust out on the outside quite a bit.
Especially an offense like Saints that has so much of a passing fetish for, you know, if you have five receivers in the field a lot this year, a guy like Arrington, who, if I remember correctly, pain in the butt at the University of Michigan for my Buckeyes, he's a guy who could have some production this year as a fifth receiver for them.
Yeah, it's looking that way, and he's been getting a lot of reps with the first team from what I've seen today. So it definitely appears as if Sean Payton is happy with the sync that, you know, the relationship that he has on the field with Drew Brees.
All right. Well, one more question for you, Bear, here about the Saints before we move on to the rest of our discussions here. First of all, how long have the Saints been out there? Is their entire training camp been out in Oxnard?
No, they just got here Monday. Monday was their first day here. Ooh, Drew Brees just threw a pick six.
Who picked it off?
I couldn't tell. They're actually going down the other direction right now. So right. I could just see that he was under center.
Go from there. All right. Well, then let's move on here. Since we're talking about the New Orleans Saints, NationalFootball30.com just released our NFC South previews. And obviously, when we have Robert Neely on the line here, who is the guru of everything Carolina Panthers, you know we're going to have a lot of coverage for him. So with Bear out in Oxnard with the Saints, with Robert with the Panthers, and me here in Atlanta with the Falcons, really the only team that's not getting its fair share of coverage, I guess, here is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So we'll have to talk about them as well. So let's go to Robert here about these previews for the NFC South that just came out. And Robert, in your eyes, are the Saints the favorite? Are the Falcons the favorite? Or are the Buccaneers the favorite?
I really like the Buccaneers a lot. I think Josh Freeman is the next breakout superstar in the NFL. He's got a great personality. He had an unbelievable season last year, his first full season as a starter. And as they continue to build a young team, I mean, LeGarrette Blount and Mike Williams, guys on defense like Mason Foster and Adrian Claiborne and Gerald McCoy, I mean, this is a super young team, but they are loaded with talent everywhere. And I do think that they challenge the Falcons and the Saints for the division title. I think all three of those teams are capable of winning the division crown. If I had to favor anybody, I'd favor the Falcons right now, just because I trust their defense a little bit more than I trust the Saints. The Saints have really spent a lot of time on the front line of their defense, adding Sean Rogers and Abreu Franklin, but Franklin's kind of dinged up right now. And I think that what the Falcons did by adding Ray Edwards is going to have as much of an impact as those two defensive tackles will have with New Orleans. So but it's going to be a slobber knocker all season long to see which of those three teams can come out on top of the division. And it's one of those things where the three teams could beat up on each other so much that, like we've seen the NFC East happen a lot, including last year, you end up only getting one team out of the division making the playoffs because nobody can get up into that 12-13 win range because there's so many losses inside the division.
Well, you know, that's the point there. There are three really quality teams in the division. But you mentioned the NFC East in recent years has gotten two or even three teams into the playoffs. You know, with the injuries to the Giants, with the NFC West being its usual weak self, and with the NFC North, we're not really sure what's going on beyond that the Packers are excellent. You know, these three teams here really could realistically see all of them in the playoffs. But let's go back to Bear Heiser real quick here. Bear, one person you get asked a lot about the New Orleans Saints is Mark Ingram. Is he going to step right into the role of the feature back this year?
Well, that was the thought initially, but he's run into some injury trouble, and I haven't seen him on the field. He's not wearing pads, and he's just been a spectator today. But with Chris Ivory, he's recovering from surgery, he's also out, and I have not seen him practicing. He was taking a couple handoffs with the running backs coach on one of the other fields. But, you know, it looks like if Ingram can get back within, you know, the next couple days, I would have to imagine that he will be slotted in that one spot. But expect him to split some carries with Pierre Thomas and then with Darren Sproles as well.
So judging by the injury situation with the Saints right now, it almost sounds like they're going to be running five wide receivers even more than usual. I guess maybe Adrian Arrington as the fifth or sixth receiver might actually turn out to be a pretty important player. But well, those are two of the contenders, so I guess we're going to touch on a third contender, which is here in the ATL. They are the defending division champions, and of course we're talking about the Atlanta Falcons. And they made one of the biggest moves, maybe the biggest move on draft day, trading away a ton to get Julio Jones to line up opposite Roddy White. Now, these two, I think, are a combination of players who are really going to make a really, really, really big headache for a lot of defensive coordinators out there, because Julio Jones has shown that he's physically ready to be a big-time receiver. And don't forget about Tony Gonzalez, who's a Hall of Fame tight end. I know he's getting up there in years, but Tony Gonzalez is a guy who's also going to be a really great passing option for Matt Ryan. So let's go back to Robert here. Robert, do you think that perhaps this is the year that Matt Ryan finally puts up those big passing numbers that Falcons fans have been clamoring for?
I certainly think he'll see an uptick. I mean, Julio Jones is just a huge upgrade over Michael Jenkins. They also get Harry Douglas back even more at full strength. Douglas played last year, but his first year back from an ACL injury was not – he did not show the dynamic speed that he has. So Having those guys, I think, will let them be a little bit more focused in how they use Gonzalez, not have to rely on him as much, and maybe save him up for the key moments in the red zone and as they get into the playoffs. So I certainly think the Falcons will have the potential to go more to a passing game if they want to, which could be important because, you know, Michael Turner has had a lot of carries the last couple years, and it'll be interesting to see how he continues to hold up as he gets towards that magical running back age of 30.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see it play out, not the least of which for my fantasy team where I have Michael Turner as a keeper. So fingers crossed on my end. But that's a good point there, though. His first season in Atlanta, he had a ton of carries, had a great year. And then he had an injury-ravaged season the year after before bouncing back last season. So hopefully, if you're a Falcons fan, you don't want him to bounce back and forth and have another down season, especially without Jason Snelling. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to watch the Falcons this year. It's a very good division. But the one team we haven't mentioned yet, of course, Robert, is the team that you know the best, which is the Carolina Panthers. Now, a week ago on National Football Authority Radio, you said you didn't expect a lot from the Panthers this season. Has anything that's happened since changed your opinion of what we can expect from Cam Newton, and are they really the odd team out in this division?
I think they are. You know, I think the Panthers fans can hope for kind of similar to what they had in John Fox's first year as coach, when Jake Delhomme kind of claimed the starting quarterback job, and they got a couple wins early, then had a long losing streak, but by the end of the year had rallied and finished at 8-8. I don't think they'll get to 8 wins this year given the division, but if they can come on and win 3 or 4 games in the second half of the season, if Newton can continue to show development and learn how to win on the NFL level, I think that that's a successful season for the Panthers. They're not going to be able to take the full leap in 1 year with a rookie quarterback, but I really think if they can get Newton performing well, kind of like what we saw with Josh Freeman in Tampa 2 years ago, where Freeman started to win some games down the stretch and then last year had a breakout season. I think that's the blueprint that the Panthers fans should be looking for Carolina in 2011 and then in 2012.
All righty. Well, then, gentlemen, let's get our official picks on the record here. Robert, we're going to stick with you. Who is your official pick to win the NFC South this year?
Since the division winner changes every year, I can't pick the Falcons again, so I'm going to pick Tampa.
All right, he's going with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bear, how about you? Who's your pick in the NFC South this year?
Well, I'm going to have to go with the Saints. The improvements that they made on defense, I think that they've positioned themselves to really take the next step, you know, after a disappointing loss in the playoffs last year. That said, I really also like the addition of Darren Sproles on offense. I think he's going to make that offense so much more dynamic, and just make it very difficult for defensive coordinators to choose who to cover, and with how many bodies to cover him with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sproles fits great into that offense there. Now, just one quick question, though. You're not saying the Saints just because you're surrounded by angry Saints fans, right?
No, absolutely not. I'm a good distance away from them.
All right. Well, then there's their official picks from our experts. And since I'm hosting the show, I'm throwing my hat into the ring. And while the NFC South has had the first place trend, hasn't had a back-to-back division winners in a very long time, this is the year the trend ends. I'm sticking with the Falcons. And no, I'm not surrounded by angry Falcons fans. I really think they are the best team in the NFC South this year. So looks like we have a pretty big split between the three of us, gentlemen. So it looks like it's going to be a fun division to watch this year. But while we're talking about the NFC South here, let's transition to another team that's located in the same part of the country, but is actually playing in the AFC South. Of course, we're talking about the Tennessee Titans and Chris Johnson. Now, there's been a lot of consternation about one of the best playmakers in the NFL sitting out right now with a big contract situation. Bear, let's go to you on this one. Chris Johnson's holding out. He apparently went to the Titans facility to discuss things with them. Is this really going to have any effect on whether Chris Johnson actually makes it to the team, or is he just a foregone conclusion to come back after this holdout anyway?
Well, if I had to guess, I would say that he's going to hold out. He's not going to play in week one. And I think the Titans, they've seen so far this preseason, they've had a lot of success with the running game. So that is as great as Chris Johnson is with his 2,000 yard contribution on the ground. I think Javon Ringer has given them, you know, some confidence that they can hold out a little longer and run this into the regular season. And the Larry Fitzgerald deal didn't really help this holdout at all either, because it just kind of, with Fitzgerald getting quarterback money, it's just now
Johnson is going to want the similar type deal, and I just don't see that happening at all.
Yeah, that's a lot of money to go to someone, that's for sure. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald's a very unique player, but that's what the money Chris Johnson's going to be looking at. I don't think it's going to resolve itself anytime soon. And you mentioned Javon Ringer, and he's a guy who not a lot of people just watch the NFL are familiar with. This is a guy who, though, when he was in college, was an absolute workhorse for Michigan State. And you know that the Titans are going to want to run the ball this year with the new coaching staff. That's their MO. So I think Javon Ringer's a guy that, you're right, probably gives them a ton of confidence. But let's run over to Robert again real quick here. Robert, do you think that the Titans are going to have a chance to get Johnson into camp, or is this going to be an ugly Vincent Jackson-esque holdout this year?
I think this one could drag on because Chris Johnson, you know, we were talking about that magical age of 30 for running backs. He knows that the number of carries a running back has is limited, and I think he's decided, until I get the payday that I want, I'm not putting any more of those miles on my legs. And, that's a stubborn approach, and if he's willing to sit out games to do that, this could drag on. It'll be very interesting to see if the Titans bend. I do think the team's going to have to bend a little bit to make Johnson happy, or else this one could drag on. And really, Johnson's already missed the deadline that would kind of in the CBA require him to come on in. So there's no guarantee that this one's going to end anytime soon.
Well, it looks like it's certainly an ugly holdout. And we're talking about running backs getting close to that age where they almost invariably start to go downhill. So, you know, there's something where a lot of teams aren't going to want to invest a ton of money long term into a running back like Chris Johnson. But speaking of investing a ton of money long term into players who get injured, we had some big news on the quarterback front, and we'll not come to two places today. And let's start and go back with you, Robert. Here we're talking about the Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning. There's been a lot of talk about how he will be ready for this. Nobody really is sure. Well, today the Colts said something very telling by signing veteran Kerry Collins, formerly of the Tennessee Titans. Now, you were talking about the Colts last week, saying you thought that they had a chance really to fall off this year. Is signing Kerry Collins a sign that Peyton Manning isn't going to be ready, or is it just kind of an absolute safety valve just in case, based upon the fact that he never really had a top backup quarterback?
I think that this is the team hierarchy for the first time really admitting, hey, this could be a real serious problem. This could cost Peyton Manning a game or two, and it's so hard to imagine that because Manning's started every game since he entered the league back in '98.
Yeah,
But I think the team looked at it and said, we've got to have a backup plan. And so Kerry Collins comes in, and Collins just 2 years ago had a really good year with the Titans. Last year, the several times I watched him play, I thought he had really fallen off and kind of gotten old. He moves around in the pocket even worse than Peyton Manning does. There's no guarantee that behind the Colts offensive line, which is being rebuilt after a pretty poor performance the last couple of years, that Kerry Collins is going to be able to be effective back there. But he should at least be able to avoid self-destructing, which is something you probably couldn't say about Curtis Painter or Dan Orlovsky, the two guys they had in camp. So, definitely there's signs of trouble there. And without Peyton Manning, the Colts are a 5 or 6 win team.
Yeah, they're in a lot of trouble because Peyton Manning's also their offensive coordinator too.
Yeah, Peyton Manning, and you got to remember, they even have lost Tom Moore and Howard Mudd, two of their veteran assistants who have been there forever and ever. So, it is really a time of transition, and if Peyton Manning gets this team to 9-7, he should just go ahead and win another MVP because the talent around him is just not good enough for that team to remain a contender. It's only going to do that if Peyton Manning puts on his normal outstanding performance.
Well, that certainly doesn't bode well for the Colts after all. Signing a guy less than 3 weeks before the season begins who's never ran one of the more complex offenses in the league, it's just not going to help them. But let's transition away from the Indianapolis Colts and let's talk about another team that doesn't really have a quarterback controversy anymore. Let's go back to Bear Hyzer on this one. And Bear, the news came down from Denver that officially it's going to be Kyle Orton starting a quarterback for them this year. And even more interesting, Brady Quinn is the number two, which leaves the much ballyhooed skills of Tim Tebow sitting as the third quarterback in Denver. Is this really a sign that Tim Tebow may never make it as a quarterback in the NFL? Or is just kind of the coaching staff saying, yeah, look, the players know that Tebow's not ready. We're going to put him in our back pocket and let him keep developing.
Well, it's the clearest sign that we've had so far. And one thing to keep in mind is that neither of the Johns, John Elway or John Fox, have any sort of ties to Tebow. They didn't draft him. They're not going to lose their job because of, if he were to play and play poorly, it wouldn't reflect on them.
by moving him down, supposedly to the third spot in the depth chart, what I see that doing is just distancing themselves from him because he is such a fan favorite. So if they did decide to move on from him, he's a little further away from, he's no longer one injury away from being the team's starting quarterback, out of sight, out of mind.
Here's another question I would have for you, too, though, about the situation with Tim Tebow. Is that a lot of college football fans remember his freshman year when Florida won the national title. He came in almost as, like, the goal line substitute quarterback. He got the ball and ran up the middle for 3 yards like a battering ram. Is there any thought to using him like that, or is the thought process that Tebow's just going to get hurt in a much more physical NFL if he's just going to be running the ball up the gut every now and then?
Well, he definitely could do that. I mean, I think there is some value in moving him to, to kind of be that fill-in goal line type player.
Like an H-back.
But I almost think that he's better suited if he isn't going to be given an opportunity at quarterback. Why not move him to tight end or let him use that big body of his? I mean, you've seen how difficult it is to tackle him. 4 years at Florida, defenders in the SEC could never bring him down. I just think that he could be used better than, number three on the depth chart, probably, either with Denver or somebody else. A lot of the criticism he's been getting lately is I feel like it's warranted. He's overcovered. He's overhyped. He's a winner, but It's easy to win when you have intelligent people creating a system around you to succeed.
You're by far the most talented team in almost every game you play it. Let's face it, Tim Tebow's team's out-talented a lot of people. You talk about players who don't transition well to the NFL. Look what's happening in college. First quarterback. He was a guy who was famous for stuff like jump passes and getting really excited. The NFL is a much more professional league. To me, this is a pick that we all should have seen coming a long time ago. And honestly, I think this is one of the biggest reasons that Josh McDaniels got fired as the head coach. I don't know, that meant that he couldn't win any football games after a 6-0 start to his career. I guess, Bear, my last question for you about the Orton situation is that does this kind of give the Denver Broncos more of a chance to be competitive in the West now that they have an established starter like Kyle Orton, who, let's face it, probably doesn't get the credit he deserves for putting up the numbers that he has put up in his career? Do you think the Broncos are going to factor into the West at all this year?
They could. They wouldn't if Orton wasn't in the lineup. I think that he's an extremely underrated quarterback. Remember back a few years ago when he, with the Bears, he was playing in some terrible, terrible offenses in Chicago. And, he did fairly well in his rookie season. He went 10-5. And then the very next year, he didn't play at all. So he wins 10 games in a difficult division and then doesn't start a game the next season. He's been kicked around quite a bit so far in his career. And given the chance, given the opportunity, and given the right system, I really think that he can succeed and be that prolific passer that, everyone kind of thought that he had the potential to be coming out of Purdue.
Well, there's no question that Orton was a very highly touted passer coming out of Purdue. And Purdue's quietly produced a lot of pretty good NFL quarterbacks. It's something they'll get a lot of credit for. You're talking to Purdue quarterback at Saints camp there, after all, and Drew Brees. But let me bring this back one more time here to Robert Neely. Robert, with a running quarterback, a run-first quarterback who went to college in the SEC, who wasn't known for his passing abilities, who was picked in the first round, turning out to be a bust, how does that something like that potentially affect a guy like Cam Newton? Let's face it. His resume is extremely similar to Tim Tebow's, except you could argue Tebow is a much more accomplished player.
Yeah, I do think Cam Newton has a better arm than Tim Tebow does. Just watching Newton in training camp, his mechanics are not that screwy. He really can get the ball downfield, throw a pretty pass. His accuracy got better as camp went on. So I think mechanically he's a little bit further along than what Tebow was.
Well, if he's not touching his ankle when he's reaching back to throw like Tim Tebow, then he's got to be ahead of him mechanically.
Yeah, so I think Newton has done that. He's really concentrated in camp on not using his legs too much. I think that what the Panthers are trying to do is get him a baseline of being able to perform in the pocket. And then once he gets that, then they'll start to kind of unleash him to use his legs and make some plays on the run. whether it's running the ball or throwing when he's moving. And the other thing that happened to Tebow is that the like Bear was saying, the organization changed on him. And John Fox is about the least progressive coach in the NFL. John Fox is a meat and potatoes conservative guy. He's not going to get gimmicky to try to find a way to use Tim Tebow. He's not going to wait for a young player to develop. He's going to play the best guy he has. He's going to rather win six games than four, even if it hurts the development of his young players. And so Tim Tebow got put in the worst situation he could possibly be in his second year. So, you know, Newton having a new head coach in Ron Rivera, a new staff that comes in with him, you got to think he's going to have probably 3 or 4 years to get things going. Versus in Denver, where that Josh McDaniels fiasco just has blown everything up, not just for the organization, but for the players that McDaniels drafted who are now being kind of thrown to the wayside.
Yeah, there's an easy way to describe it. It's called the my guy syndrome. If it's not one of, quote, my guys, I don't have the same investment into him. And Tim Tebow, John Elway probably doesn't have half the investment into Tebow that he does into just the team being a winning team. I think the only investment the Broncos really have into Tim Tebow is the fact that his jerseys sell so well and it makes the franchise a ton of money. But I guess we're going to close on one final note here when we're talking about running quarterbacks who were really good in college that people have questions about in the pros. Got to mention the fact that Terrell Pryor was a third-round pick in the supplemental draft by the Oakland Raiders. So, Robert, we're going to close this out with you. I have said for a long time, I think that if Cam Newton is a first-round pick in the NFL and people think he's going to be a success, and I think Pryor, based upon the fact that he's played in a pro-style offense for 3 years, had a ton of success, learned how to read a defense, and his mechanics improved noticeably every single year, and he's a winner, I think he's just as good a prospect in the NFL as Cameron Newton. But was it really a surprise to anyone that the Raiders reached for athleticism into the third round in the supplemental draft?
Yeah, I mean, it's no surprise. That's the kind of guy that the Raiders seem to end up with all the time. But let me make a case for this for them. First of all, they spent a third rounder. They don't have a fourth rounder in the draft. So it was basically third rounder, or they probably weren't going to get him because I've got to believe that there was another fourth round offer out there for Terrell Pryor. He's too good of an athlete. The other thing is they have a quarterback going into a contract year. So they have a year with Pryor this year with a quarterback guru as a head coach in Hugh Jackson, at least for the minute. You know, who knows how long a Raiders head coach will last. I think the over-under is about 20 games. But at least it gives them a chance to develop somebody for the future. And if they had spent a third-round pick in the April draft on a developmental quarterback, I don't think anybody would have looked sideways at it. So it's definitely a gamble. And, you know, the overall atmosphere in Oakland is not necessarily the most advantageous for developing young players. But it's a gamble at a position where they need a future. I got to hope that Pryor doesn't go and wear number two in Oakland. That'll give Raiders fans flashbacks to Jamarcus Russell. But, you know, I'm not sure that Pryor's going to turn out, but I do think the Raiders are going to give him a shot to play quarterback. And he couldn't have landed in a better situation for himself personally in terms of getting a shot and getting paid. So, good luck to him with that.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. Let's face it, the Raiders are in a league that doesn't have a lot of great quarterbacks. The Raiders are particularly delinquent at the quarterback position. I mean, Jason Campbell, he does not impress me. The rest of the guys, they're even less impressive. I have to think of this about Terrell Pryor, too, though, is that, first of all, like you said, I don't think he's going to wear number two. He's a guy who actually in high school wore number 11, but the number was taken when he got to Ohio State, else that's what his number would have been. So maybe that'll be what he wears. But I think Pryor is going to be into games sooner than people think. I think they're going to use that five games where he is ineligible to start of the year as nothing but a big study session for him to catch up. I wouldn't be surprised if Pryor ended up taking a lot of snaps down the stretch this year because the Raiders probably aren't going to be that competitive. And it'll be very interesting to see what Terrell Pryor's future is, especially if Al Davis – I mean, Al Davis is behind him here. Let's face it. If Al Davis sticks around and Al Davis stays healthy and as healthy as he can be, I mean, you know, Weekend at Bernie's healthy, I guess, would be the apt way to describe him at this point. But, you know, if Al Davis spent the money on him, Al Davis is going to give Pryor a chance. So you're going to see him starting for the Raiders at some point in the future. And honestly, judging by his track record in college, I wouldn't bet against him necessarily either. So anyways, that brings us to the end of the NFL Writers Roundtable here on National Football Authority Radio. Robert, where can people find you on Twitter? And where can people find all your work aside from nationalfootballauthority.com?
My Twitter handle is at Robert Neely, and that's N-E-E-L-Y. I'd love to continue the conversation there. If anybody thinks I said something stupid, call me out on it. We'll talk about it on Twitter. And also can check out stuff at footballrelativity.com.
Excellent, excellent. And by the way, that's the same way that hockey great Cam Neely spelled his last name, for those of you out there who don't, may not be able to get the spelling correct. And of course, we want to thank Bear Heiser for coming on. You can follow Bear on Twitter, at Bear Heiser. He's also on nationalfootballauthority.com. Bear is no longer on the roundtable with us at the moment because he had to run off and try to get some interviews with some New Orleans Saints. Hopefully, we'll be able to include that as well here on the show tonight. So, Robert, thank you so much for coming on. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the NFL Writers Roundtable, the National Football Authority Radio. Well, that's all the time we've got here today on National Football Authority Radio. I'd like to thank Jimmy Graham of the New Orleans Saints for giving some time out there at Saints training camp in Oxnard, California. And big props to Bear Heiser for being there to take part in the interview. And, of course, big props also go to Robert Neely for joining us on the NFL Writers Roundtable. I'm Matt Baxendale. You can follow me on Twitter, at Matt Baxendale, MattBaxendell. I'm all over the place. I'm going to be talking everything from the NFL to college football to, heck, even pro wrestling. Okay, I live in Georgia. Give me a break here. Wrestling's kind of fun. All right, well, on behalf of everybody who's on the show today and on behalf of NationalFootballAuthority.com, the shooting star of football coverage on the internet, thank you so much for tuning in to NFA Radio. And don't forget to check out our NFA Radio College Football Podcast. It's going to be coming out this weekend as we finally nail down the last few previews of the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the SEC. And then after that, ladies and gentlemen, finally, football season has arrived and we can talk about the action on the field. I am super pumped. See ya!
You're listening to National Football Authority Radio. NationalFootballAuthority.com, the shooting star of football coverage on the internet.